Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The Nasher Sculptor Center in Dallas, Texas presents Sculpting Sound, 12 Musicians Encountering Bertwa, a series of six concerts pairing 12 master musicians to a particular instrument that will be played with sounding sculptures. To explore the expressive range of sound artist Harry Bertwa, February 22nd through the 27th. On Tuesday, February 22nd, Electric Guitar Night with Nels Klein and Ben Maunder. And on Wednesday, February 23rd, Trumpet Night with Ambrose Ekin-Musiri and Nate Woolley. For more information, NasherSculptorCenter.org. At Birdland in New York City, inside of Birdland Theater tonight, Thursday, February 17th, through Saturday, February 19th, vocalist Sasha Dobson and her band. And on Sunday, February 20th, vocalist Miss Mabel and the Jazz Age Artist, and vocalist Alyssa Allgood and her quartet. And inside of Birdland Jazz Club, the Birdland Big Band tomorrow night, February 18th, and trombonist Ryan Caburl's All Ears Orchestra on Sunday, February 20th. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Saxophonist Emmanuel Wilkins, touring behind his new release, The Seventh Hand on Blue Note Records, will be at these venues in California. Tomorrow night, February 18th at SF Jazz in San Francisco. Sunday, February 20th at Bach Dancing and Dynamite Society in Half Moon Bay. Monday, February 21st at Cumbwa Jazz Center in Santa Cruz. And on Tuesday, February 22nd in Portland, Oregon at the Portland Jazz Festival. For more information, EmmanuelWilkins.com. This Friday and Saturday night, February 18th and 19th at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, clarinetist Ken Poplowski and his quartet for two sets. And on Sunday, February 20th, Brazilian singer and songwriter Fabiana Massilli. For more information, jazzforumarts.com. Saxophonist Stephen Gauci, bassist Michael Bizio, and drummer Whit Dickey live at Shoals Street Studio in Brooklyn, New York, on Saturday, February 19th, for two sets. For more information, shoalsstreetstudio.com. Clarinetist Don Byron and his quartet perform at the Falcon on Sunday, February 20th, in Marlborough, New York. For more information, liveatthefalcon.com. And now for new releases. Coming out tomorrow, Friday, February 18th, trumpeter Wadada Leo Smith's Emerald Duets on Tomb, the group Joyride's self-titled and self-released album, and pianist Michael Weiss's Persistence on Cellar Live. More new releases that are out now. Pianist Ethan Iverson's Every Note Is True on Blue Note. Saxophonist Adam Larson's With Love from Chicago on Outside in Music. And vocalist Eugenie Jones's Players on Open Mic. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. And let me just disclose, I was a music ed student.
Oh, awesome.
So wow. I so feel your pain, but go on. My guests are three University of Connecticut senior students: trumpeter Brian Oliveira, majoring in music education; oboist Aaron Naclerio, majoring in music education; and saxophonist Michael Burrill, majoring in music education and jazz studies. So thank you, you three, for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Thanks.
So here we are. This is your final semester at the University of Connecticut. The three of you, give us one sentence to describe your feelings about it at this moment. Let's start with Brian. One sentence.
I'm really excited to get out there and start my career, but stressed in the final few months here.
Aaron.
I'm shocked with how fast it has flown by.
And who am I leaving out? Is it Michael? Michael.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm amazed at the sheer amount of stuff that I've learned and been able to accomplish in the past 4 years.
You're all music ed students. Have you all begun your practicums, student teaching?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. What elements of teaching do you put into every lesson plan? Why don't we start with Brian?
Yeah, I think one thing for me is just trying to differentiate how I'm teaching a certain subject. So if I'm trying to teach students a new concept, maybe I write it out and I have them listen to it, or I have them do a couple different things, just because I know a lot of students, you know, they learn in different types of ways like that.
Yeah. What grades are you dealing with at the moment?
Right now, I'm student teaching in high school.
High school. Okay. Aaron.
Right now, I'm in a 6th grade through 12th grade school. So I'm seeing a wide range of kids. But no matter what I'm teaching, I try to include elements that I'm really passionate about and that I can get really excited about, because I'm teaching some classes that are a little unfamiliar, like teaching guitar has, you know, taught me how to play guitar pretty fluently. But I also try to incorporate elements of music that I really enjoy in introducing my students to different styles, and sort of like what Brian said, a different ways that students can interact with the music.
And Michael.
Yeah, so I'm at a 5 through 8 middle school. And we're, one thing I'm really cognizant of in my teaching is making sure that all of the, as much of the learning as possible is active learning, and not just having the students sit there and listen to me talk at them about, you know, dynamics or articulations and other sorts of stuff. I try to really engage them and have them, you know, playing things in different ways and discussing how it works with, like, how it feels for them and what they're noticing and, like, listening wise, and really engaging them and having them sort of discover things, less me telling them, you know.
So how have you prepared for this last semester? Preparing for recitals? Have you started gigging off campus? You know, just because you're a music ed student doesn't mean that you're not going to go out and start earning money, maybe playing on the side. Aaron, let's hear from you. How have you prepared for this last semester?
So I actually did my final recital at the very end of last semester in early December. So it was nice to get that out of the way before full-time student teaching this semester. On top of that, I still dabble with pit orchestras specifically, so musical theater. I really enjoy playing oboe, flute, saxophone, a bunch of different woodwinds in one. And on top of that, I also teach oboe lessons on the side. So that's kind of giving me a taste of what teaching private lessons is like versus teaching in the public school setting.
Michael.
Yeah, so since my freshman year, I've really tried to take advantage of the people at UConn and the professors, including Earl McDonald. And this past year, he has been so incredibly helpful in facilitating me breaking out into the like professional music scene. So I've been able to sit in with a couple of the bands that he plays with, and he's even given me a couple calls for gigs, which I've been incredibly thankful for because it's given me a lot of opportunities to play in like several jazz clubs around the state, different big bands, and even some pit orchestra experience like Aaron does. So that's been really good. I have my recital coming up in just over a month now. I kind of wasn't planning to do one, but then I saw people like Aaron's recital and Brian's recital, and I kind of got a little bit of FOMO and had to do one.
And Brian.
Yeah, I did read my recital, like Mike said, at the end of last semester. That went great. And then there's one band I'm kind of playing with that's hopefully going to get some gigs soon. And honestly, it's just a struggle for me right now, keeping my chops up, trying to work on my own stuff and stay ready for any sort of jazz gigs that's come my way while I'm student teaching. So just taking advantage of those 20 and 30 minutes here and there just to keep it going so I'm ready.
And when you're not practicing, when you're not studying, when you're not preparing lesson plans, what do you enjoy doing at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut? Michael.
That's always a tough question. I do a lot of open houses and like accepted students days, and I'm always asked this question. I'm always like taken aback because there's just so many things. Like extracurricular clubs and just like people and like parties going on and that kind of stuff. I'd say my favorite thing currently, at least, with COVID numbers going down, is going to the student union on weekends for late night and going and watching karaoke and partaking in all the like fun little things that they have going on. Like I remember a couple of weeks ago they had like a stuff a husky thing where you could go and stuff your own husky, sort of like build a
Wait a
bear.
minute. Did you say stuff your own husky?
Yeah, sort of like build a bear.
Okay.
So that's currently what I'm enjoying.
Let's go to, I don't know, Aaron.
So this year is definitely very different for all of us, considering student teaching sucks up our entire time. And not only that, but COVID has really changed the scene of the campus right now. But in the past 2 or 3 years, still related to music, I've been in marching band and pep band. So it was a blast going to the football games, even if our team didn't do too well, and the basketball games and the hockey games. That was always such a fun time to spend my weekends with my friends. And like Mike said, our student union has late night activities. So that was cool to, hang out with my friends in a non-music setting as well, and talk about stuff besides school. I used to also work at the rec center, so that was a big part of my day and something I really enjoyed.
And Brian.
Yeah, for me, I am also in a few clubs that I try to go to on some weeknights, music-related stuff, and I did marching band for most of the years as well. One thing that a lot of people do, especially the last couple weeks with snow on the ground, there's a couple of really good hills around here, so there's plenty of sledding going on in January and February, so that's always a fun thing.
Sweet. What assumptions did you enter college with about being a creative artist that has now changed? Michael.
I was expecting to be pushed to my limits beyond a reasonable expectation. I've heard a lot of stories of like art students or music students not sleeping at all and like practicing every free minute they get. And while you certainly have the choice to do that, there are no professors, at least at the University of Connecticut, who make it their expectation. I found it's actually the opposite. Most of them are more than happy to accommodate you and be willing to help you if you are overloaded. And if you do need to overload yourself, like I was doing, I'm pursuing a double degree both in jazz and music education. And there were some semesters where I was really loaded on work, but all my professors were really helpful in communicating with me and working out ways that I could be successful and not burnt out.
That is beautiful to hear. Brian.
Yeah, I think I'm a little different in that I definitely entered college wanting to do music ed in and of itself. That's kind of what I thought. I wasn't thinking about much of a career on its own in music outside of that, but through a lot of the jazz band and combo stuff I started doing, I think I really found that and got excited about that and excited about my own practice. So along the way, I've kind of decided that that's something that's important to me and that I want to be part of my career is to pursue jazz music in some capacity.
And Aaron.
I actually came into college not planning to study music. I applied pursuing chemistry, mostly out of the fear of playing all the time and getting burnt out. But I did, in discovering the music program at UConn, I was intrigued. I applied, started pursuing it and told myself that, it's a risk with any career is getting burnt out, but if it's something I love, then it's something I, will work through. And so I did expect to play nonstop. And that's also kind of like Mike said, you do play a lot, but there's also downtime. Like there's time away from your instrument and time to enjoy college away from the music experience as well. And that's something I didn't really anticipate was the sheer amount of time I would also have in other classes and away from my instrument that would prevent me from feeling that overperforming burnt out.
Let's talk about who you are listening to. Doesn't matter if it's someone on your instrument or even in jazz. Who are you listening to right now? Brian, who are you listening to?
The last year I've been going between a few trumpet players a lot. Chet Baker, listening to his vocals and his trumpet playing, transcribing a lot of that. Clifford Brown. And I was studying with someone last year who really had me going for Roy Eldridge a lot, which is not usually the kind of stuff. I don't usually listen to as much of that early stuff, but I got into that sound a bit as well.
Aaron.
I'm really interested by kind of related to the whole Broadway pit thing, by musicals and movie soundtracks and TV soundtracks. So a lot of Michael Giacchino, John Powell, James Newton Howard, Danny Elfman. But I also really enjoy folk music like Hozier and Dermot Kennedy. So quite the range.
Quite the range. And Michael.
My go-to spot has always been Motown. I've always been exploring that kind of stuff, like Temptations, The Supremes, all that good stuff. That's really where I've been. I find myself going back. I'll explore something new and I always just come back to it. But currently, that's just been my whole dig.
Pianist, composer, arranger, and conductor Earl McDonald is one of your teachers, Michael and Brian. What non-musical life lessons has he taught you that you feel have prepared you for life as creative beings?
I can start off on that one.
Go ahead,
I
Brian.
think through I've been taking private lessons with him for a couple years now, and I think just the way that he regiments and has me thinking about practicing and how I can scaffold skills to get better has been something that's been really relevant to me otherwise, just finding specific time and knowing exactly what you're gonna do. Because especially now with student teaching, that's kind of how I need to think about my practicing and all of my other work and life skills just to keep me sane and keep me going and all that.
And Michael.
Yeah, I remember freshman year in his intro to improv course, and then again sophomore year in jazz arranging, he told the same story and it's resonated with me. And I wish I could remember the name, but it was of this one hockey player, some Canadian hockey player, that he knew about who would stay, who would show up early to practice and stay late every single day. And he would practice the most obscure things, like the most obscure techniques, like going backwards and like sliding, like between cones and like a really weird pattern. And he would practice that nonstop. And then, but because of all that weird, obscure practice that didn't seem to make any sense, there were times in actual games where he could move in a way that no one else could. And he would connect that back to our practicing as both as musicians and as other things, and that to be like the best at something, or to strive to being the best at something, you have to practice in ways that aren't what you're familiar with and aren't what other people might necessarily say is what to do. So I've always been, since him telling me that, I've always been looking at things and wondering, where can I take this in a way that most people would leave it?
And Aaron, though you didn't have Mr. McDonald as a professor, would you like to name one of your professors who has passed on life lessons to you?
Gosh, I mean, there's so many professors through the UConn music department. Just off the top of my head, I'm thinking about Mr. John Mastriani and Dr. Peter Kaminsky and Dr. Jesus Ramos Cottrell, teaching just about, like, through music, how to enjoy life and how to treat other people and be a good human being, because music is such an innately human subject that it directly relates back to character and the way that we treat others. And they've helped show me that, you know, like, music is an art. Everyone has their own story and they have a different way of expressing that. And I think that has helped make me not only more empathetic being a teacher, but also empathetic as a person and being open to hear everyone's story and everyone's voice.
Well, you three, we're coming to the end of this interview. So I want to give you the opportunity. Is there a question I didn't ask of you? Is there something you'd like to say about your experience as student teachers right now, ready to step into the world as performing artists or as teachers or maybe something else? Why don't we start with Michael?
Yeah, I remember as I was leaving high school and getting ready for college, a lot of people were telling me it's less about the university that you choose and more the experiences that you seek out when you're there. And of course, being, you know, a know-it-all senior in high school, I was like, that doesn't mean anything. They can't be telling the truth there. But having gone through the whole program and really been provided a lot of opportunities and gone after some and not gone after others, I really think that, you know, University of Connecticut's a great place, but I feel like there are, like, wherever you go, it is up to you with who you choose to utilize, be it professors or peers or people in the area, and what you seek out for yourself.
Mm. Brian.
Yeah, I want to reiterate part of what Mike said, just the idea that so much of music is what you make of it, and whether you're attending a university or not, there's so many different ways that you're pursuing it, and I really hope to continue to pursue it and continue to be a lifelong learner of music, and also the idea of education and a professional. I know a lot of people struggle with that balance, but I really do think it's possible to continue to pursue my own musical career as well as, you know, give 100% to a job as an educator. So I'm excited for that.
And Aaron.
I think coming into college, one of the best pieces of advice I was told was you'll end up where you're supposed to be. And whether you put yourself there or the universe puts you there, you'll find a way to make the most out of the situation that you're in. And it really comes down to taking the initiative. And like Brian and Mike both said, taking advantage of what you can. And that's propelled me a lot through college, is similar again to what Brian said, becoming my own person and not comparing myself to the students before me or the image of the teacher that I should be, but rather the teacher that I want to be.
For more information on the University of Connecticut, UConn.edu. And now for some music. From his fifth recording as a leader and the follow-up to Soul Journey, we heard a selection from pianist Michael Weiss's Persistence on Cellar Live Records. We listened to the Jimmy Van Heusen tune, Only the Lonely. This release becomes available tomorrow, Friday, February 18th. We heard him with tenor saxophonist Eric Alexander, bassist Paul Gill, and drummer Pete Van Nostrand. Weiss has upcoming gigs in New York, New York City, Brooklyn, and Rochester. For more information, michaelweiss.info. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My interview is with pianist, composer, arranger, conductor, and educator Earl MacDonald. He serves as a professor and director of jazz studies at the University of Connecticut. Consecrated, his 2021 release on Outside in Music is, quote, a deeply spiritual, personal album for Earl MacDonald, and therefore a deeply refreshing one for the jazz listener. In both his musical artistry and in life, MacDonald clearly searches for beauty and a connection to the divine while comfortably exploring dissonance, both cognitive and musical. So thank you so much for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you for inviting me. Yes.
From your bio, it says that all 7 of your albums differ in instrumentation. In what way are they similar, and how does Consecrated compare to your earlier releases?
Huh, that's an interesting question. The question would typically be the opposite. How are they different from one another? But how are they similar? So far, before this record, all of my albums were instrumental. This is the first one where I have incorporated vocals throughout the album, which makes it special. My compositional approach, I guess, an arranging approach is the through thread. Is that the right word? I'm not sure. That keeps them unified.
That's a good answer. I'll take that. For this recording, did you openly wear your faith on your sleeve? not to dominate or put pressure on anyone in the band, but to convey your sentiments about the pieces written for Consecrated?
I suppose so. Again, that's another interesting question. Do I wear my faith on my sleeve? Maybe, maybe not. In recent years, when people ask me if I'm a Christian, I will say I'm a Christian, but not one of those kind of Christians, you know, referring to sort of what we've seen from the evangelical right in aligning themselves with a political movement and with Christian nationalism, let's say. So in a way, this album puts it out there that I come from a Christian tradition. But I'm also trying to separate myself from the pack a little bit in that sense.
Is there one composer whose work you admire?
Oh, there's so many. Jim McNeely is someone that I really look up to. I studied with him in the BMI Jazz Composers Workshop. Mm-hmm. Jim writes for many ensembles, but he was known as the composer in residence for the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra. He's writing for a jazz group in Frankfurt, Germany now. Vince Mendoza is another one I admire very much. And another one of my teachers is Fred Hirsch, who I really enjoy his compositional work in addition to his piano playing.
Have you found yourself borrowing composing devices from any of them?
Totally. I do that all the time. And in fact, so I'm on sabbatical right now, which is really fantastic.
Ooh, sweet.
Yeah. So I have some extra time to do listening and I'm actively composing these days. So a lot of the listening that I do, you know, I carry around a little notebook with myself and I'll just jot down things like, wow, that was a really cool idea. Maybe I'll incorporate that into one of my pieces. So I'm doing that quite often. Borrowing, I call it, as opposed to stealing.
Borrowing, we call it.
Right. Yeah. In quotations, yes.
You consider yourself a social commentator and provocateur involved in political and social activism. How do you incorporate these practices and efforts into your teaching approach and philosophy?
Well, I do teach a course that's called Jazz Music and Social Change. And it was a freshman honors course for non-music majors, primarily. There were some music students in there, but mostly it was non-musicians. And wow, was that ever a lot of fun. You know, we went through we went through all kinds of recordings and studied. It wasn't treated like a jazz history course where it was sequential, you know, going from a starting point to an ending point in a timeline. But we picked albums based on certain topics and examined and discussed the topics on which the pieces were composed, and also examined the methods in which they delivered their message. So, man, that was really insightful for me as a composer. I learned a lot. I learned probably just as much as the students learned through that whole process.
What was their impression of the class? How'd they react to it?
I think they really loved it. I think that many of them were surprised at the scope, of topics that we would address, that it wasn't strictly limited to race, let's say. Or, you know, that it got into politics, that it got into climate change, or it wasn't limited to the African-American experience, right? There was, it was interesting that we dealt with, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Miguel Zignon, am I saying that right?
Zignon, I believe, Zignon.
Yeah, okay. He has a fantastic record, for instance, that dealt with second generation Puerto Ricans in New York.
Yep.
And trying to find their identity and wrestling with their identity. Are they Puerto Rican? Are they American? Are they New Yorkers? What are they? And how do they fit in with their families? And man, it's really deep. But But that was eye-opening for a lot of the students. And one of the students of Puerto Rican descent chose that album to make her presentation, that they all presented a different album. It was just beautiful seeing people's eyes opened and having these conversations about these issues and them sharing their own personal experiences with their families and what they had encountered. Mm. So very cool.
Presently, you're the director of jazz studies at the University of Connecticut. You're a clinician and you're a freelance musician. Have they made you more flexible and open as a teacher and as a player and as a composer?
Yeah, you ask great questions and unexpected questions. It's good. It's interesting. My students have introduced me to a lot of different kinds of music. Things that I hadn't even heard before. So that keeps me open and flexible. In lessons, they might bring in a certain composer or a certain album and say, hey, I'm checking out this person. Have you heard them? And on occasion, I haven't. I'll often begin at the very onset of my jazz improvisation class, I ask students to name their three favorite jazz musicians. And on occasion, there might be someone that I hadn't even heard of. And so, they're keeping me current, which is great. But then there's the other perspective of, as a teacher, I have to be able to impart knowledge and to inspire people to investigate this music, perhaps become artists themselves. So yeah, that's a completely different perspective as well. It keeps me grounded. It keeps me wearing all these different hats. I think it definitely helps. As an artist, there's so many different hats that I wear, right? There's writing liner notes, which is completely different than composing music or playing. The mind is working in different ways and it informs each different area differently. And I think makes me a deeper artist.
Mm. Now let's talk about Consecrated and sure. the people you played with on that release. I want to just open it up and I want you please to talk about it in your way.
Okay. So in terms of the people, that I recorded with, it's interesting. So I had no intention of recording this album. I had a different project in mind. And that said, you know, I've been writing arrangements such as these for many years. Having grown up in the church, I played piano in church. I played organ in church. And I would write these little arrangements that could be played, you know, as special music selections or offertories or things of that nature. So I had many of them, but I guess I was waiting to find the right singer, and I wanted someone that had that understood the jazz language, that whole tradition, but that also sang with sensitivity and would look very deeply into the lyrics and try to convey their message. I didn't want someone that came across, you know, too, I don't know, sometimes personalities come across too strongly, I find, you know, with jazz singers. So I wanted the music to, they had to work together, right? It had to be, they had to complement one another. And I didn't know if that singer actually existed. So I kind of put this project on the back burner. I thought, yeah, maybe someday I'll find that person. And I did, miraculously. So the story was this. I was giving a presentation in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, which is my hometown, surprisingly. You know, I hadn't been there for a while, but I was up in North Dakota adjudicating a festival. And I, the University of Manitoba, they contacted me and said, hey, would you like to come up and give a masterclass? So I did. In that masterclass, I was speaking about my compositional projects. And I was talking about this song, By Our Love, which is on the album. And it's an arrangement of the song, They Will Know We Are Christians By Our Love. It asks all kinds of questions. Are Christians known by their love, or are they known by something else, right? And that ties in with the whole political alliance business and all of that. At that presentation, Carly Epp was in attendance, the singer, and she asked many questions. And her husband was the bass player who I was playing with, who's also on faculty. I was wowed by his playing. I didn't get a chance to hear Carly sing. Instead, we went out for dinner afterwards, had a very nice conversation. And back in the hotel room, I said, okay, I'm going to look up to see what she sounds like. And I went on Google and I listened to her and I went, oh my goodness, this is it, right? And I knew, coming from Manitoba, her last name was Epp, which is a common Mennonite Brethren name, right? So I suspected that she had that church background. So I thought about it for a little while, and then I got on the phone with them, and I said, look, we need to talk a little bit. It's going to be strange, but we're going to talk right about religion. I've got to find, you know, see what your background is in terms of that, and then I'm going to pitch a project to you. And so that's how we met. So there's that Canadian aspect, which makes it international. Also on the international theme is Rogério Baccato, one of my favorite percussionists and drummers. He's from Brazil. And I had done another project with him and Chris Allen previously, a band that's called COW, which is an acronym for the Creative Opportunity Workshop. And yeah, cows have been a theme for our conversation, haven't they? Beforehand, we were joking about cattle. And then I wasn't sure who I'd use on trumpet. Initially, I had Ingrid Jensen in mind, another fellow Canadian, and she was unavailable, but she recommended Dave Smith. And I knew Dave from working in that BMI Jazz Composers Workshop. He is another Canadian, actually. He's from Toronto originally. So there's a big Canadian component to this album. He's a marvelous player.
So Earl, as we come to the end of this interview, I want to know, is there something you'd like to say to us? Is there a question that I didn't ask? Please.
I could talk a little bit about the album's title, which is called Consecrated. It's an interesting word. I grew up hearing this word in church, but hadn't really given it much thought. There's a song called Take My Life and Let It Be Consecrated. And again, I didn't really think about it too much until later. So I investigated what does it mean to be consecrated? Consecrated, I guess, means to set apart for a higher purpose. So when someone says, take my life and let it be consecrated, it's basically saying to God, hey, take me, use me as you please. Let me be your instrument. Mm. I also liked the lyrics within that song where it says, take my hands and let them move at the impulse of your love. So as a pianist, man, that resonated with me. I thought that was super cool. So that was my desire as I embarked on this project and embraced it. At first, I kind of fought it and thought, do I really want to release an album of hymns? I'm not sure, right? But I thought about it. I actually prayed about it. And I said, hey, you know, I see that this could be an interesting thing, interesting project. God, can you use it? Can you use me in this way? Right? Because it gets so tiring. You hear people release albums and what's it about? Check me out, right? Check out how I write music. Check out how I play piano. I'm so excellent, right? And I didn't want this album to be about that. I wanted to do something different. I wanted to prompt people to think differently or to experience these old songs in a different way, other than the tired old way that they're sung in white Protestant churches, you know? Okay. So that was some of the motivations behind this. By Our Love was actually inspired by hearing the song sung the day after Trump was elected. So I guess it was a couple of days after, right? It was on a Sunday. It was the first Sunday after Trump's initial election. And I had remember reading stats that said 80% of white evangelicals had voted for this guy, right?
Yes.
And it shocked me. It horrified me. And here I am in a white evangelical church and I'm looking around and my heart is just full of sorrow. I kind of feel frightened. I feel anger. I feel all these things. And I'm looking around and I'm thinking, okay, maybe my congregation is different, but the stats aren't telling me that, right? So at least this congregation is divided. So the opening song that they sang at that service was They Will Know We Are Christians by Our Love. And people are singing it and they're actually doing it in a reggae version, really kind of lightheartedly, right? And I'm thinking, are Christians known by their love? This guy spewed venom throughout that entire campaign, right? There was hatred that came out of this guy's mouth, right? And what are people voting for? Are Christians known by their love or are they known for embracing this individual who doesn't personify the Christian faith, but who will defend them in order to get their votes or defend their interests. Anyway, I couldn't sing the song. And I just kept looking around and there's lyrics about unity. And I thought, man, we are not a unified body here. I don't feel unified with this group of people. It was a real turning point for me. You know, so at that point, I thought, I've got to do something, right? So I thought, okay, eventually, you know, once I got home, I left and I was still stewing. And then I thought, you know what, I'm going to arrange this piece. I'm going to turn it on its head, you know, and make it so that people can't help but listen and ask questions as they hear it, because it's going to be brooding and it's going to ask all those deeper questions, you know, where are our alliances? What compromises have we made, you know? So I got to work. The piece was initially premiered at UMass Amherst. But also interestingly enough, they wouldn't allow me to submit program notes because they thought it would be too political. So the piece was played and it was greeted by, you know, polite applause. I was hoping for a riot, you know, and I didn't get it. So what I ended up doing is I questioned how I could strengthen this. So we added a visual component to it. And I collaborated with a professor of illustration at UConn School of Fine Arts. And we made an accompanying video that incorporates scripture and poses all these different questions and uses fish kind of as a metaphor. And we talked about political tribalism and, anyway, it's really worth checking out. I love the final results. And we actually created a separate webpage for that song. It's called buy-our-love.com. It would have cost me several thousands of dollars to buy the buyourlove.com without the dashes. So I took the cheap route, but that's out there. And I'm very proud of that multimedia presentation that we put together.
For more information, earlmcdonald.com.
Take my hands and let them move at the impulse of thy love. Take my feet and let them be swift and beautiful for thee, swift and beautiful for thee.
Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.